Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show.
Pride Daily.
Hi there, I'm Kev McGraw, and this is Pride Daily. A homophobic TikToker's crying his little heart out over AI videos portraying him as gay. Next, as video games firm Electronic Arts is sold to a Saudi-led consortium, is their LGBTQ+ content at risk? And Sylvester Stallone's wife says the children of Hollywood stars turn out transgender because their lives lack structure. Sylvester's clearly the brains of the outfit. Pride Daily is the world's only daily LGBTQ+ news podcast, bringing you the top three global stories in just 2 minutes. Everyone's welcome. Search Pride Daily in your pod app.
This episode is proudly brought to you by our friends at California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog and start your family building journey today. It's also brought to you by Be Parent Surrogacy. And if you mention the Queer Family Podcast when you reach out to them, you're going to receive $2,000 off any service you book. All right, let's get into it.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Those thoughts and the genetic component, which is a big component for our families.
We have a very open discussion about all these things. And for us, it never mattered who's going to be biological father.
I have to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. Have you been having a hard time hearing me?
No, it was okay.
My microphone was all the way over there, I just realized. Oh my God, my editor is going to kill me. Does it sound a lot better now?
Yeah, it sounds a lot better, yeah.
Oh my God, I hope I didn't just screw up this. Okay, sorry. I hope I didn't screw this. I can't believe I didn't bring my mic over to me. No, okay.
But we heard you fine, so.
Yeah. So
okay, hopefully my editor, Jerson, can make magic because that is, I cannot believe I just did that. Okay, sorry to interrupt. What the heck? Mom brain. Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm your gay host, Jamie, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our fabulous identities and in all of the fabulous ways we make our families. And this here episode is really going to dive deep into surrogacy. I got to sit down with Anish and Miguel, two dads who recently had their baby boy through surrogacy at an agency. And let me tell you something. There are people who go about this family building journey in very meticulous ways and very organized ways and very thoughtful ways. Well, we're all thoughtful, let's be real. But there are some who are more meticulous than others. And these two are them. They thought through every single step. They made checklists. Like, if you're looking into surrogacy as your path to parenthood, this is kind of the master class for you. This is your checklist. This is your glossary. This is your emotional support network because they did the work for us, so you don't have to. It's a really great episode. And another beautiful thing about it is they actually used Be Parent Surrogacy, which is the sponsor of this year's episode, which makes it even more special. We really get into the intricacies of the surrogacy process when you use an agency in this episode. And it's a special one, and I really liked it. And so I think you're all going to enjoy it too. On another note, my son got a Rubik's Cube for his birthday. And then we went over to a friend's house recently who has a son who's like one of those Rubik's Cube genius people who like who can solve it in like 2 minutes, and he knows like the algorithm and stuff. And so my son was like, I want to do that. Oh my God, I want to figure it out. So one night me and him sat down and we watched some videos about how you solve the Rubik's Cube, and he lost interest pretty promptly. But you know who didn't? You know who didn't lose interest? This girl right here. That's who I am officially obsessed with solving the Rubik's Cube at the ripe old age of 47, soon to be 48. Yeah, you heard me. I'm going to be a Rubik's Cube genius, much like I have the dream of being a roller skating dancer, but I can't even roller skate. It's never too late to dream, folks. It's never too late to dream. I'm obsessed with the Rubik's Cube. At this point, like my thoughts, they like if somebody like changes the subject, I think of it like a Rubik's Cube. Like my brain is turning into a Rubik's Cube. That's how obsessed I am. Anyway, if there are any Rubik's Cube aficionados who want to give me some pointers, reach on out because I'm officially obsessed. Ah, the life of a mom. It's really exciting stuff over here in the Kellwoods house, as you can see. Ah, children. But all right, let's get into Anish and Miguel's story. It's so good. It's so lovely. And I need to go get back to my Rubik's Cube. I'm not even kidding. Oh, Lord. Okay, Helen, Beulah, give me my Rubik's Cube, Helen and Beulah. Look at them trying to take... No, nobody's allowed to touch it now either. Not even Orion, and it's his Rubik's Cube because I'm in a process. Okay, Helen, Beulah, put the Rubik's Cube down and let's roll that tape. Thank you. They're not real. I don't have assistants, but I got a big imagination, that's for sure. Okay, let's roll the tape.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Anish and Miguel.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. It's so nice to be here chatting with you. You're coming in all the way from where?
From Berlin, Germany.
Berlin, Germany. Wow, that's exciting. I love it when we're talking across the pond. It makes me happy. But I do know you have a child sleeping somewhere. And so at some point, we're going to hear possibly a baby crying and we're going to have to tend to the child, which happens a lot on this show.
Correct. Little Alexander is turning 4 months on Sunday.
Oh,
he's
my God.
Sleeping now, but his feeding time should be very soon. So.
Oh, my God. So he's a baby.
Anytime. Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. First, let's get into your elevator pitch, your 30-second elevator pitch to tell us at home who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your mark, get set, go.
We are the Kolb family, and we live in Berlin. We are here participating in this podcast because we believe that family is a right for everybody, irrespective of your gender identity, irrespective of where you're coming from, who your partner is. We truly, truly believe that gay people can have families too, and we want to share our story. Yeah, we have a beautiful son who is 4 months old, as we said before, and we are very excited for this journey for us and to share this with everybody along the way.
Oh my God. Amazing, amazing. I'm so excited. You have a baby, like a baby. You got a real little one. It's so exciting for you. So let's take it back to how the two of you met and got together. Let's take it back to the beginning of you.
We met 4 years ago at a bar.
Mm-hmm, as you do.
Yeah, at a bar in Berlin. I wouldn't call it love at first sight, too. it was more like a journey. And I was in a very weird place in life. I was coming out of a relationship where I felt very, like, choked. You know, like I didn't have room to breathe, but I just wanted to, you know, party, live life as you do in Berlin. And I met Miguel in a place where I was not ready to meet anybody. And from there, it was just a roller coaster. Like it was just uphill, you know, not the downhill part, but the uphill part where I was open to being surprised. I was open to new experiences. I think the biggest thing what this relationship had taught me is I could love somebody and I should be open to somebody loving me. That was life changing. And I didn't ever believe in you meet one person, fall in love for the rest of your life, and you know, you're just happy with this one person. You're just the same, you know. But I think with Miguel, I've been evolving. And if we go through our journey, it's been nothing but amazing. I'm not the same person 4 years ago. I've conquered some addictions. I've conquered I've developed my personality quite a lot. And all of this with Miguel not asking me a single thing to change. You know, it was all within, and he gave me the space. And we're very happy. This is my story.
I just want to add to that I think at that point in my life, I was ready to build a family. I was looking for a person that I can be with for the rest of my life, that I can live my dream of building a strong family and being this gay family that we wanted to be. And yeah, it took me a lot of work to convince him that I was the right one in trying to do things. But I think also very early on, in when we were getting to know each other, it was very clear that one of the most important things to me was to build a family, and that I wanted Anish to be on the same page, and that he would go on this journey with me together.
Miguel, you knew Anish. It took some convincing. It took some time, sounds like. Despite the fact that you were gay, Miguel, it sounds like you always knew that you would be a parent.
Yes. I always dreamt of it. I love kids, and I always dreamt of having my own family. Yes,
you also have a big family.
Yeah,
you're also
big family. And how about you, Anish? What were your thoughts on family?
Mine's a bit complicated because I come from India, and in India, family is big.
Yeah,
but I was not the family type.
Mm.
Like I was not the family type. But also moving to Berlin, I lost track of this family lifestyle. You know, like in Berlin, it's too open. You party a lot. You're just out and about. Mm-hmm. And you're just constantly dating and not committing. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking bad about Berlin. Like, it was just the phase in which I was in. Non-committal, being open to different experiences. Miguel brought this idea back. I would say the first date that we went after the bar incident, like the first time.
Incident.
the first time that we actually went, we went on a walk. There was this like checklist of things that, you know, we were talking about. Hey, what do you think about family? Hey, what do you think about raising a child? Hey, what do you think about marriage? What do you think about monogamy? What do you think about all of these things that we talked that were very important to us? Made me realize two things. One is there is something with this person that I can, invest time in. Let's come back to what we always wanted, what I always wanted, like to be a part of a family.
Yeah.
Now we do have a family.
You do. So the conversation around family started really early, which it usually does, especially for us queer folks, because we have so many decisions that we have to make, and we have to make sure that we're on the same page. Like, even if we both, like with non-queer people, I say non-queer, I like to other them and not other us, but with non-queer people, you know, the conversation can end at, so do you want kids one day? Yes. Okay, good. We're on the same page. Because you just assume you're going to baby dance the old-fashioned way and get your kiddos. But with us, it has to go beyond that. This conversation has to go beyond, do you want kids one day? Yes, I do. Okay, how do you want to do it? Well, how do you think we should do it? Like, what does, do genetics matter to you? Like, so many decisions need to be made. And so that's why I think we queer folks go a lot deeper into that conversation from the get-go and uncover a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's many more things to be on the same page.
Many. So you know you're gonna do it. What was the conversation surrounding how you're gonna do it?
I had already been doing research for a long time, and I think
he's already been saving money too.
And I've been saving money for a long
time. Because you know it's gonna cost a pretty penny.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately,
I was just waiting for the right person, and within that research, I also contemplated adoption. Just the process is so long, so complicated. So while I think we didn't think genetics matter so much, we just thought with our age and with our resources, let's say, the easiest way and the fastest way would be through a surrogacy.
Yeah.
And adding to that, I was under the opinion or a belief that I want to adopt. But like being with Miguel, I think my thinking also evolved a bit into leaning into the direction of genetics. Do matter for us, not to a degree that I wanted to be, or but to a degree that I think it's nice to have one of us, like, you know, raise a biological dad.
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful journey, I would say. It was not from the get-go, like, okay, you know, adoption or surrogacy, no, but it was a constant discussion about, okay, what does it mean to us? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to us? And how does it relate to 3 as a whole?
We're so intentional when it comes to this, yeah. Right? There's because so many decisions. So you weighed through your options and decided on surrogacy. And then had you already like researched where you would do it? Like, were you already that far into your research?
I was not that far. And I think because also it changes a lot, like laws change fast, country options in countries change very fast. So that I had done research years ago, but that wasn't up to date anymore. So then when we decided that we wanted to start the journey, we started the research again from scratch and weighed our options, checked our finances, made some decisions that would guide us to where we are now. Also, I think making sure that in every step of the way that we were doing the right thing, we would travel, we would go talk to the agencies, there was even
a genetic test
that we did just to make sure what was possible, what was not. Yeah, so a lot of research went into it.
And you did the genetic testing on your own, or was that like advised through like a surrogacy clinic or agency?
We did it ourselves based on our research. So there's this test called karyotype testing,
mm-hmm.
where your chromosomes and the egg donor's chromosomes are matched, and they can see like, you know, what conditions, genetic mutations that you may carry. Doesn't necessarily have to, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's just better to, like,
to know,
have this information mm-hmm. prior.
Because when we have the choice to choose the donor, then we want to make sure that we're going to make the right match for yep. us. So if we can, let's make sure that they're going to, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, genetically match or whatever.
I'm going to take a step back for a second. I want to say something that I think it's very important for this journey as well. We do have goal settings every year. So every year we set goals to achieve.
Uh-huh.
So this I bring part of my management, like from my work.
Uh-huh.
So 2 years ago, we set a goal saying we want to make progress in surrogacy research. But then we already found BParent and found the agency that we want to work with, and we already went ahead. So as per our plan, we were supposed to have Alexander this year,
mm-hmm.
but we already, like, things aligned quite well.
Okay.
And then we, like, you know, predid it.
Yeah, we started the process, I think, almost 1 year before what we planned, yeah.
All right, so your planning didn't work out. I mean, it worked out, like, too well.
Yeah.
Amazing, yeah. Good for you.
These are all the different things that we, checklist of things that we wanted to do before we started the process. And the karyotype testing was one of it. So we wanted to make sure that we make the right decisions. And we always thought about the whole process as risk assessment. Like, what is the risk that we are willing to take at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and for folks who are listening, anybody can do it, right? It's always about what is the level of risk that you want to be exposed to, and how you want to mitigate when things go not according to your plan.
Like, give me some examples of, like, goals you set and, like, why. And
I think, for example, because we had different countries as options to do surrogacy in Europe, one was, okay, let's go and visit the agencies, talk to different agencies, first of all, to see if everything is true. Second, let's see what they have to tell us, like how they work, what are their facilities, who are they working with, and what clinics are they working with? What hospitals are they working with?
And the human connection.
Yes.
Like, we believe in, like,
yeah.
like, it's a big deal, you know?
Totally.
You're bringing a person to this world. And we want to make that choice, informed choice, with the right people around us. And for us, to enable that, we needed that trust element. That was a huge deciding factor when it came to, like, which agency we chose or which direction that we wanted to go.
Exactly. I think we were... Or at least before we arrived, I was thinking, like, the facilities and who are they working with. And then I think we realized that trust was the most important.
Most important.
You if you're working with an agency, you need to trust them, because basically you cannot be there all the time. You don't have the resources, yeah. Don't speak the language. So it was very important for us, or a very big realization it was, that we need to find somebody that we can really trust.
Yeah. And there's so many, there are so many steps.
Yeah.
That you really rely on this agency.
Exactly.
For, especially in an agency, which it sounds like with BePerent, they cover everything.
Correct.
So, yeah. And so you really need to trust the agency that's handling all of these tiny decisions and things and appointments and all this stuff.
Everything. I think we wouldn't have done it without, it would have been impossible without an agency for us.
It's a lot of pieces to put together, exactly. Right? So it's nice to have an agency that is like your umbrella and who guides you through it. So it sounds like you researched a couple though, like more than just, like how many did you check out?
Quite a lot.
Yeah, I think we visited four, online we checked out a lot, and then we visited four agencies.
And where were they? Like you visited, where did you visit?
Like in Europe.
But like in... Because you're in Berlin, so where were you traveling to like visit the agencies? I want to get an idea of how much, yeah. Like this is even before you start the journey. Like, this is why I'm always saying we are so intentional. There is so much thought and work put into even the journey, you know? So where were you traveling to?
We were traveling to Cyprus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we did think about Mexico as well. It came down to like the distance aspect. The distance was very important for us. We wanted to be able to go quickly as possible. And we live in Europe, right? So within Europe, we can travel.
Yeah.
Ukraine was another option, but due to the war at the moment, it's not an option. Yeah. So then...
So we decided.
Yeah, here. Colombia, Mexico were also on the list. But
and those are far.
Cyprus was the easiest and closest, basically, for us. Yeah. But for example, for the genetic testing, we went to Poland.
Yeah.
Because we just... could take a train from Berlin and go there, and it was much cheaper than doing it in Berlin. So, yeah.
It's so, you guys are so lucky in Europe. You have everything, you have things so close. Everything here is very far away.
And US wasn't an option for us because it's too far and it was very expensive. Yeah. And we could just never fly as quickly as we can within Europe.
What are the laws surrounding surrogacy in Berlin?
In Germany, it's forbidden.
Okay.
You cannot provide services. The people are not penalized, but the doctor's offices are penalized. So no doctor's office provide any services around surrogacy.
Oh, wow. So you have to travel. You have to leave the country to do it. So it sounds to me like you settled on the agency you chose, which was BePerent, mainly because of that connection and also proximity.
I mean, they ticked all the boxes from the admin stuff and the clinics they were working with. But in the end, the decision was just big because we trusted the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
They gave us the trust and they gave us the feeling that they would support us throughout the journey and make it as easy and smooth for us as possible. While I think always being realistic, I think that was very important also, mm-hmm. that they always said, hey, don't get too excited. Things can go wrong at any point.
They were very realistic. Some of the agencies that we met were like very focused on, oh, you know, give us a sperm now, you know, deposit it now. You know, they didn't even say hello to us yet, you know.
Oh, they were like getting right to the nitty gritty. And
coming from a place where we want to build that trust, that was not an option for us, right?
Right.
And two, we saw some agencies where the contracts were 2 pages, like front and back, you know? So that was not very trustworthy also. BePerent was very thorough. The contracts were very exhaustive. They walked us through all the different elements of the process, the exit process. It only came down to the trust element. Like we could look at this person and rely on them and make sure that they have our backs.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's not an easy process and it's very, very scary. And having us talk about, having us in a very real sense of, okay, this could go wrong. These are the risks, you know, just be aware that this could go wrong. Nothing went wrong. Our process was one of the smoothest it could go.
Lucky.
Right. So nothing went wrong, but at least having that awareness helped us
mentally prepare for anything that could go wrong.
To be realistic, yeah. I mean, I remember when we were first deciding like which sperm bank to choose, me and my wife, we went and visited one in the city here. And it was similar to what you were just describing. Like we walked in, we really just wanted to we didn't know anything about the process. We just wanted to see, how does it work here? This was like a private sperm bank. So we walk in and they sat us down and they gave us the list and they were like, choose a donor. We were like, wait, we didn't even say we want to do this. We just were trying to, yeah. And it feels very so transactional.
Yeah. Stressful.
Like, yes.
It felt very stressful to me. It's like, you don't even know my name,
yeah,
but you expect me to like, you know, like sign a contract with you and bring a life to this world.
Right. Pressure.
Yeah. It was not very easy for us.
I actually felt pressured to like pick some sperm. I was like, I don't know. Wow. Should we just pick one of these, you know, like, oh, I don't know. But thank God we didn't. But like, you need to get the right vibe. I agree 100%. Yes.
We'll be right back.
And on that beautiful note, folks, I just want to say this little podcast that could has covered everything from sperm donation to adoption to fertility treatments to surrogacy. We run the gamut, all the queer family building journey gamuts. And today we are really, really shining a light, as you can see, on surrogacy. And Be Parents Surrogacy is helping our community take that next step toward parenthood, just like they did for Anish and Miguel. So special, so special. And what really, really struck me in their story, which you just heard, was that sense of personal connection and trust. And that's the thing about Be Parent. They believe everyone deserves a family, rightly so. And their entire process is built around inclusivity and compassion, which is key. And here's also what I love. Everything they do is under one roof. So embryo creation, medical care, legal guidance, emotional support, no juggling a million clinics and lawyers all over the place. It's seamless. They make it seamless. And there are no wait lists. You can begin your journey when you are ready, not when a system decides it's convenient, when you're ready. Plus, their surrogates and donors go through a triple screening process. And parents receive personalized step-by-step guidance from a multilingual team that actually understands the full spectrum of our LGBTQIA families. It's not just a service, it's a community built on trust, empathy, and the belief that love makes a family. Can I get an amen? Yes, yes, yes. So learn more or start your journey at beparentsurrogacy.com. Oh, and if you mention this little podcast, the Queer Family Podcast, when you book a consultation, you're going to get $2,000 off any service you book. So go to beparentsurrogacy.com and start building that family now.
Hey, it's Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time, an award-winning podcast about parenthood and reproductive health. We talk about things like sex ed, birth control, pregnancy, bodily autonomy, and of course, kids of all ages. But you don't have to be a parent to listen. If you like surprising, funny, poignant stories about human relationships and, you know, periods, The Longest Shortest Time is for you. Find us in any podcast app or at longestshortesttime.com.
Back to the show. Love is love. So then you sign with Be Parent or however that works. And then how did it go from there? And how did you make the decision? Did you like pool both of your sperm and did you do the mixing of the sperm and see what happens? Or and you don't have to answer anything if you don't want to answer anything. And if you don't want people to know who's got the genetics or whatever, anything you feel comfortable telling us.
We signed the contract. So it was, as I said, it was very exhaustive. I think there was a bit of silence. what I realized during this process is that it's not like uphill. Mm. It's like a sine wave, right? So you go up and then it's just quiet for a very long time. So these are like milestones that I would say. So signing was a milestone, was a big milestone for us. And then giving the sperm was a big milestone. And then the egg donor was a milestone. So anybody who is wanting to do this process, I would say this, it's not going to be like uphill every day, right? So it's mostly quiet, but that quiet phase is the most difficult phase. You know, you don't know what's going on.
And you're waiting.
Right?
Yeah, it's not like buying a car. Like you get the keys and then you take the car. Yeah, it's not like that.
It's not that. And coming to the genetic aspect, that's the only thing that we decided not to share due to personal reasons. But other than that, the agency helps us with every step of the way, right? So after we sign, then we decide on the egg donor, right? So I think the signing and the egg donor decision happens at the same time. So they just want to make sure that they have the right egg donor in place when we sign, so that we can continue.
Okay, so like you looked at the catalog, for lack of a better word, you looked at the donor catalog before you signed, just to make sure that at least someone you would want as your donor is actually there. That's smart.
And the agency suggested that we do that as well.
That's right? Smart.
So that's the trust building aspect that I talked to you about as well. So we know that they have our back, right? They don't want us to get into an agreement and then not have the right donor, but rather like have both and then have the signature done.
Were you able to meet with the egg donor, talk to the egg donor? I know it's different with different agencies and different.
Where we did, it's anonymous egg donation. So we're not technically supposed to like meet the person, but we do have the catalog that the agency helped us identify.
But the egg donors are anonymous there.
Be parent, like across the board, they're all anonymous?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that's me and my sperm bank. It's an anonymous until 18. The kids can choose to try to contact him when they turn 18.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an open donor in that respect. But is there anything like that with your donor, or is it completely?
Completely anonymous, not in our case. Yeah.
Okay. So what were you looking for in an egg donor, if I can ask? I call this search the search for the superhuman, because we can make the choices, some of us get a little cuckoo, like me.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I think we were realistic still. So as you see, I'm brown and he's white. So we wanted someone in the middle. So then we went with the Brazilian egg donor. So we wanted, as I said before, we don't want to share who the father is. right. So we wanted,
it has to look like both of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. A lot of us do that. And I just recently talked to another couple who had a Brazilian egg donor. How funny. Actually, like three couples have Brazilian egg donors, which is just interesting. Brazilians are beautiful. I mean, come on now.
True.
One more question regarding the egg donors. So these egg donors are like basically in their catalog. I'm just wondering how it works. Like, do they already have eggs on ice from these donors? Or is it like, whoa, they picked you. Are you willing to donate?
It's fresh donation.
Okay.
Once we decide who the egg donor is, then the agency like collects the eggs freshly.
Okay, gotcha.
Also, the agency suggested that because they said that in order to do IVF, if you have fresh eggs, the quality is higher, or the chances of them being fertilized are higher. And that again is one of those points where we had silence for a long time because we had to wait for the donor to be available, for her cycle to start, then she had to take the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day we get a message and say, hey, we just retrieved eggs today, everything went smooth. Until then, we had, I would say, I think it was 6 weeks of quietness where you're just waiting and waiting and hoping that everything goes well.
Did she get a lot of eggs?
We got 23.
23, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of eggs. Good job. Yeah. Good job. That's awesome. Yeah.
Good job to the, thanks to the egg donor.
Yes, thanks to the egg donor. So had you already like made your deposits or then you had to go like give your sperm?
Prior to that, we had already gone to give the sperm. Because the sperm can be frozen. So they had already our frozen sperm there, ready for doing the IVF as soon as they had the egg collection.
Right. So they got, and then they got to work right away. I know you don't want to share the genetics and who's biologically connected, which I completely respect and completely actually very much so understand. But could you share a little bit about your conversation regarding like who would be a lot of times in queer family building, we have to have the conversation about like, how do you feel about if you weren't genetically tied? Like we go deep into those conversations. So I'm wondering if you two had anything that you wanted to share regarding those thoughts and the genetic component, which is a big component for our families.
We have a very open discussion about all of these things. And for us, it never mattered who's going to be biological father.
I have to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. Have you been having a hard time hearing me?
No, it was okay.
My microphone was all the way over there, I just realized. Oh my God, my editor is going to kill me. Does it sound a lot better now?
Yeah, it sounds a lot better, yeah.
Oh my God, I hope I didn't just screw up this. Okay, sorry. I hope I didn't screw this. I can't believe I didn't bring my mic over to me. No, okay.
But we heard you fine, so.
Yeah, so.
Okay, hopefully my editor, Jerson, can make magic, because that is, I cannot believe I just did that. Okay, sorry to interrupt. What the heck? Mom brain. Okay, carry on. You were in the middle of a sentence.
So it didn't really matter who the biological father is. For us, what matters was one of us is biological mm-hmm. father. So we've had, both of us have had our discussions about, hey, this is important for us, you know, and we said it is important, but it doesn't matter who. It was easy. It was really, really easy for us.
I agree.
That's awesome.
And because we did all of those tests as well, it was like, okay, if one of us cannot be the genetic father, it's going to be the other one. It's going to be fine, you know. And
right.
That's also, I think all doing all these tests also gave us the confidence, okay, whoever is it, it's going to be fine. And what I wanted to add to that was, I think something that happened to me very early on is that I think the first weeks I was seeing our baby and I was just like saying, he's beautiful, he's great, but I'm feeling like I don't have this connection, you know? Same. And I was actually scared to say it.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
But totally. then I told him, and I was like, I'm feeling this. And then you said, wow, I
feel the same too. You know?
And that's so normal. Yeah. It's so normal, but we don't talk about that.
Exactly.
I think it happens to many new parents. You have a whole new human. Like,
yeah.
Right? We got to get to know each other now. And especially when it's your first kid, you don't know what the emotions are going to be like. And you hear these fairy tales that it's this huge, like, wave of paternal or maternal, like, everything takes over and you love that. And some people, yes, they do have that. I didn't have that.
No.
But I was scared because our first one, I wasn't genetically tied to. And so I had shame surrounding it. And I was afraid to voice it because I was like, oh my God, it's probably because I didn't give birth to her, or, you know. But then I gave birth to our second, our son, and I felt the same exact way. Right? So it had nothing to do with that genetic biology.
So no, that was the point that I wanted to make. Yeah, that it's not so much the genetic ties. I think this love and this relationship just comes with time. Because
it does.
I was very scared. I was very scared. I would look at this kid. I love him, but I don't feel that urge of like
the paternal.
Yeah, the paternal love. Mm-hmm. You know. So I felt very ashamed, I would say. And then we talked about it and. It just takes time. It just takes time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not responding to my cues. I expect him to react. And I don't think his needs are met. I want my needs to be met. You know,
right.
I'm telling him, hey, you know, react to me. So it's a journey. It's a journey.
It's like your first lesson in parenting. Nothing goes as you assume it's going to go. Nothing. Nothing is what you think it's going to be. It's not.
Yeah.
And they grow into you. They definitely do. You cannot. They become just little parts of you. And yeah, it's beautiful and so hard and so complicated in all the ways, all the ways.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
And one moment, please. Speaking of that whole connection grows over time thing, let's talk about making these little humans in the first place. For so many of us queer families, donor conception is part of the story, as you heard in this here episode. And California Cryobank, as we know, has been supporting our community through this for decades. They get that choosing a donor isn't just a transaction. It's emotional, it's vulnerable, ooh, so vulnerable, and sometimes it is downright overwhelming. At least in my case, it was. So whether you connect instantly or that bond grows in layers, like we talked about, the beautiful part is that family is something you build, not something that just magically appears fully formed, especially not for us. And California Cryobank is there from the start of that process. They offer one of the largest, most diverse donor catalogs out there. Plus, they have childhood photos, some adult photos, genetic testing, and all the details you need to make an informed choice. And because they've been longtime supporters of this show, you know they're committed to LGBTQIA+ families. I know it, and you know it now. So what you're going to do is go to cryobank.com and use code QUEERFAM25, and you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that code for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. The more info we can get, the better. So go ahead, head to cryobank.com, start building that family, and then come tell me about them. Let's get back to the show.
Love is love.
Okay, so egg donor chosen, sperm is deposited, and then they made embryos, I'm assuming.
Correct.
And there's a lot of silence in between there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I think they did the embryos one or two days after, and then we had to wait for 5 days for them to give us how many embryos they had created and the grading of the embryos. And yeah, those 5 days were also a very long time. And
those are hard.
Yes. And then again, I also think we had to learn so many things. And we had to research about so many things, because suddenly you're confronted with, okay, now we have embryos and they're graded. And what does this mean? And what do I need to decide? What do I need to look into? What is important? What is not? So
the blastocysts.
Yes.
All the technical terms.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Things that we had no clue about before. So... also a lot of research in every step of the way. But then we got our embryos, and we had, I think, four or five that were good enough.
Three boys and two girls,
exactly.
All right.
Yes, yes. And then we decided to go with the one with the highest rating.
Uh-huh.
After that, signs again until the agency would get us a surrogate carrier. Yes.
And were you involved in the finding of the surrogate, or did they find it and say, we found someone, they live here? Like, how does that work?
The way BParent works is that they suggested that they look for potential surrogates. And then what we agreed on is that they find somebody, they send us the profile, we check, and if we think it's a match, then we would have an interview with them to get to know each other a bit better. If we weren't happy with the profile, they would find somebody else. If we, after the interview, we would feel like it was not the right person, they would find somebody else for us. But it was it matched. So the first person they suggested for us.
There's 2 points to add here. One is we had a specific need that surrogate mother has to be from Georgia. At least from like one of the countries where you don't need a visa to travel to Germany because of the legal. Like there's this thing called proof of paternity, who the father is, that you can do early on before the childbirth. So that speeds up the exit process.
Right. And you can both be proof of paternity, both of you on the proof?
No, only one. Miguel's the... so we wanted the baby to have a German passport. So Miguel is the...
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Actually, all the things you need to think about. Yeah. What passport did the kid have?
And parentage. Parentage is a huge thing, right? Yeah. Especially here in the States. We have to get second parent adoption and it's complicated.
Two, we also had low expectations for the... The bar we set for the surrogate mother was also low. We wanted the surrogate mother to be able to help us carry the child. If she's healthy, that's enough, right? So we didn't want to put too much thought into requirements. There was no requirements per se. Was she healthy? Is she willing to do? Why is she doing it? What her motivations and reasons are to do it? And that was enough for us. And we found the best surrogate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, really, she's amazing. She's strong. She's amazing. She's very lovely. So that was the next process, the next step in the process.
And then you found her and she got pregnant. And you kind of then, once the pregnancy happens, then you are kind of in touch with your surrogate as it goes along, correct?
We were in touch through the agency.
Okay.
Because we don't speak the same language.
Ah.
So we go through the agency.
So and we would have calls together.
Yeah.
And she was in Georgia?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so she was going to her doctor's appointments in Georgia.
Correct.
And the agency was like making sure that she was in the right place to go. Like they picked.
They would go with her. I believe they would go with her to the appointments, and then they would take videos, pictures, and then share them with us and send us the pictures, videos, medical reports, and just keep us updated. So
they kept us updated quite well.
Yeah.
Like really.
Yeah.
Well, that's good because you're not going to any of the appointments.
Exactly.
Which must have felt hard.
Yes, yes, yes.
Scary.
Very scary.
But I think we placed our trust in the right agency. Yeah. Like it all ties down to that. I don't know what B parent would say, but we were less demanding, in my opinion.
right? I mean, I can understand being demanding when you're, you know, first of all, you're paying like a life savings. It's not cheap. And it's one of the most important decisions of a person's life. So I can understand being demanding. So
it's totally, totally valid to be demanding, right? Because it's your kid, you know. Mm-hmm. But also, like, we trusted them quite a lot to make the right decisions. And they kept us informed quite well. I think we built that trust from early on. And I keep repeating this because it boils down to that. It really, really boils down to that. We had a very good experience throughout the whole journey.
That's great.
And because you have these waiting periods, again, there's one appointment, the next appointment is a month after. So within that month, you just have to wait and you have to trust. And yes,
those times,
it can be a very long time to wait.
It's like hearing crickets in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. I know.
And the parent team would always tell us, hey, she's pregnant, but I think after the first week. But don't get overexcited.
Yeah.
Anything can go wrong. Next appointment a month after. Hey, everything is looking very good. All the values are in range. Everything is good. But
don't be too excited.
Don't be too excited.
I mean, it's good to stay realistic because it's true. I mean, I've talked to couples who've done surrogacy who it's taken many, 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 many like tries and years. So it can. It's building life sometimes. Yes. It's complicated.
Yes.
There's also an element of like our luck. You know, like we've been very blessed.
Yeah.
We've been very, very blessed. It's our first try. We did everything well. We took the right advice from the right people and we managed it quite well.
Yeah. And you lucked out. And that's great. So when the birth happened, were you able to be there for the birth? How did that work?
We weren't at the hospital, but we were around the hospital, right? But we weren't allowed
to
be in the same room for privacy reasons and totally understandable. And Alexander was born and we could see him after 2 hours after he was born. And we would just get a message saying, hey, you can come to the hospital at this time. And then we were able to go. Mm-hmm. And then we met Alexander.
Oh, wow. Okay. Congratulations. Congrats. And so you didn't have any contact, like in-person contact with your surrogate?
No, we only met her when she came to do the paperwork during the pregnancy.
Yeah, yeah. She traveled to Berlin with support from the agency. One person from the agency also came and we met here in Berlin, had to sign some documents, went for a nice lunch. Yeah, it was also very nice to meet her and also reinforced our thought that we made the right decision with her.
That's great. And so, and then Alexander was born and now you're parenting. You're in it. You're deep in it.
Yep. It was tough in the beginning. It was. So coming back to the birth, Alexander wasn't breathing properly. So he was taken to the NICU for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was grueling. Oh my God. It was the worst days of my life. But yeah, we trusted the doctors, right? So they know what's best. And then we could bring him back home after all the paperwork. We did have some complications with the German embassy, not the embassy, with the German authorities, with the German paperwork. But with all of that fixed, we could bring Alexander back 3 weeks after he was born.
So what was the complications though?
I think that is a very long topic.
Well, is it this? Is it the parents?
Yeah, having to deal with people that do not know how to do their job.
Well, basically. this is actually, we talk about this a lot. Like if it has to do with like parentage and not being recognized as the dads, was it something like that?
It was more in terms of
For the birth certificate, so according to the process, like the exit process, we needed to get a German birth certificate to get the German passport, right? Because we did the proof of paternity before, what happens is Miguel now flies to Germany and says to the German where he stays, where he lives, or where he was registered, just a small town. And like we thought, okay, if we register here, the process would be faster.
Right.
But it ended up biting us. So we go there and we say, so he goes there and he says, hey, can you give me a German birth certificate? This person's very new and very young, so she doesn't know the process. He said, oh, this is super complicated. I don't know what to do with this. So
figure it out.
Yeah. So, and that cost us a little bit of stress.
Yeah.
But we were still able to get an alternate document for Alexander. Like it's complementary, not necessarily the same. So they have 4 or 5 documents that can be accepted for the passport. So we got one of those and we were able to come to the German embassy and then we got the passport and then we flew out. So it wasn't necessarily like there's a hole in the process, but more like there's a knowledge gap for the person that, right, that was dealing with our case. And she didn't want to take any decisions because she was new to the job.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
But now she's helping us with everything. Adoption, she's going all in.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Yeah. She's redeemed herself. But so you just mentioned adoption. That was going to be my next and final question. Anish, so Miguel, you are listed like on the birth certificate as father.
Mm-hmm.
Anish, are you listed anywhere as parent, or is that what we're talking about with the adoption and things like that?
I'm not listed anywhere as a parent. I don't have any legal rights to Alexander.
Yeah.
So we just finished the signing.
So the surrogate mother had to sign a document like waiving her rights and giving her rights to Anish. And that was only possible 8 weeks after he was born.
Oh.
Because basically within the first 8 weeks, it seems like the German law says that the woman is not...
Cannot make decisions.
Decisions. Yeah, because women, we can't use our brains, especially after childbirth.
Exactly.
Right.
That is what the German...
That's crazy. Yes. Oh, my God. And also, she's listed as the mom, even though she's not the... She's not biologically connected to this child.
Genetically tied to the baby.
That's German law.
But based on German law, whoever is giving birth is the mother, regardless of the genetic ties.
I mean, that's it. In many places, that's what they do.
So now, once we have this, we can continue with the adoption process. Basically, a court needs to, in the end, decide that Anish becomes the father of the child as well. On paper.
It's basically just, it's like the adoption process. You have to go through all the steps of the adoption process. Are in Germany, how are they with these same-sex adoptions? Do you know, in general, are there ever issues surrounding this? Or you might not even.
The general idea is that they make the decision what's best for the child.
Right.
Most cases, from what I heard and from my research, they will side with the parents. But sometimes it can be that, they're not very thrilled about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because based on where you are from, there are some conservative regions that can be very conservative. So it depends on a case-by-case basis and who's the judge in your case. But mostly they will side with the parents because the German law is that the child needs a stable and a loving family. And I think gay parents will definitely give that for this child. And I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, list all the steps you took to get that baby home. Like, get out of here,
Well,
exactly. Yes, we will provide a nice home. Trust. Changes need to be made. One of these days, us living authentically and showing up the way that we do and challenging these, outdated norms will change the world for the better. And helping someone like you have parental rights over your son doesn't just help gay people. It helps all people.
Yeah.
Right? All the rights that we fight for actually end up helping everyone else. It's not just for gay people or queer people. I think our troubles and tribulations and the hoops we go through will eventually end up helping to change the world for the better. That's my hope. I have to believe that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, for example, while we might not be ready with all the paperwork for him and passports and everything, we got both got paternity leave.
Yeah.
So, oh, nice.
Yes. Yeah. We both got it. That was no issue. In Germany, you also get...
they're very generous.
How do you say that? Parental allowance or something? Yeah. Yeah. So we also both got parental allowance.
Oh, wow.
Yes. For Anish, it was even a faster and smoother process than for me. So there's also things that are going very well and very fast.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
We always dwell on the negative side, right? Like, but there are so many positives. Like we could walk on the streets with Alexander, like being just us, you know?
Yeah.
So we live in a society where we're very blessed. And structurally, we don't have like the parentage on paper, right? You know, but we did get the benefits from the government. And one day we were talking about it. What is the pinnacle of equality? This is the pinnacle of equality. You know, I get the same benefits as straight couples or, mm-hmm. you know, for other traditional families. So for us, that was a big win. We called it a win. We were like,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's a win.
Yeah. Getting money from the government for it. Yeah.
We got to take our wins. Yeah. And I think you're right. We need to remember to highlight even the little wins. And the fact that you can walk down the street and nobody questions you or gives you
yes.
problems, or and you don't have to hide. Yeah, that's a win for us. That's a win. So
big win. Yeah.
Don't forget that we have good things. We do. We do. And we're going to change the world to make it even better.
I really genuinely try. Now I've inspired 2-3 couples, in fact, to go through surrogacy, or at least think about it and try. For me, it's very important that I didn't have that support system. And us getting on this podcast is also for that pure reason, you know, like share our stories. There will be somebody who can resonate with your story and you know, you could help them achieve family.
No two stories are the same. That's why I have like almost 300 episodes and it keeps going. I've interviewed a lot of people who've done surrogacy to build their families, and no two stories are the same. Like, I just learned so many new things hearing your story, so many different things, right? So I think it really is important that we are out there and telling our stories, because like you said, it's going to inspire others. Like, maybe there's a couple who's like, oh my God, this is our path and I want to do it just like Anish and Miguel did it. You never know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing your story. It means a lot. And I'm so happy for you, and good luck with that little nugget, because you're in the beginning. Here we go, baby.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jamie, for giving us the opportunity and for giving us the platform to tell our story. I think it's very important for us to share our story and to inspire others. Yes.
And the amazing work that you're doing, having this platform and the ability for people to come on and share their story and like make us feel comfortable about it.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yay. Well, it's just a love fest. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, keep me posted. I want to know how everything goes.
Thank
you so much.
Giving us the opportunity.
I love it.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge thank you to our sponsors of this here episode, California Cryobank and Be Parent Surrogacy. Learn more about them, find the promo codes and the links to their websites in the show notes. Make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.